Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Kushal Thacker and Peter Bukvar. Kushal is a speculonomist, consultant, and author of Be Rich with Speculonomics. He specializes in trading the financial markets across all asset classes with a very unique value-driven approach that we will discuss on this podcast. The book is the most simple secret to analyze asset classes and how one asset class links with the other for anyone and everyone's understanding. We'll also post a link to the book and the podcast and also on our media website. Peter is the Chief Investment Officer for Bleakley Financial Group and advisory at Bleakley. He has a newsletter product called thebookreport.com, BOOKREPORT.com. It offers great macroeconomic insight and perspective with lots of updates on economic indicators. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Richard. Good to be here.
Thanks, Richard.
Great. I thought we'd begin with a discussion on your global macro view on the economy and the financial market. So maybe we can begin with Peter.
So right now, with rising interest rates in response to higher inflation, I think we're beginning to see the signs of a global economic slowdown. I think if you look at Europe with the war and the spike in energy prices, and not a coincident rise in wages to the extent, is going to result in a sharp pullback in consumer spending. And I wouldn't be surprised if Q2 was the beginning of a recession in Europe. I think in the U.S., we're beginning to see the early signs of consumers being more price sensitive and pulling back on buying things to the extent that they did before, and which makes sense. I mean, if inflation's running as high as it is and if wages aren't keeping up, then it's your natural reaction to trim back on spending. You end up spending more on necessities, you spend less on discretionary items, and the net result is an economic slowdown. And then, of course, you have global trade, which is obviously a key input into GDP, and that's obviously going to slow. China is slowing, and piling on top of this is yes, we've already had a rate move, pricing in a lot of the rate hikes, but we also have the Fed that's going to be rapidly, and I'm using in quotes because that was used by Lil Brainer today, going to be shrinking their balance sheet, and the balance sheet adjustments have had a direct impact on asset prices. And the direction of asset prices filter into actual economic activity as everything is intertwined. So it's been a bumpy year so far, and I expect that only to remain that way or at least intensify in the quarters to come.
Great, interesting. And your thoughts, Kushal, on the global macro view and on the financial markets and the economy?
Sure. Sorry, Peter, I slightly disagree on the timing aspect of the recession. What I feel is, I think we are at the birth of a generational bull run in most of the asset classes. And this is mainly because of the cost push inflation that we will be facing. You did mention about the necessities, people will be moving into it. Yes, no doubt about it. But the necessities themselves are going to be very highly priced. And this is going to result in some sort of moderately high inflation, where people will be bringing the money into so many asset classes, leaving the bonds aside, that we are going to be seeing a melt up which we've never seen before. I will not be surprised if all the markets start hitting multi-year highs and some of the assets going for multi-bagger returns. Where recession is concerned, no chance of a recession for a couple of years till actually there is too much of production of most of the agro commodities across the world.
What are your thoughts on that, Peter? Do you see a lot of this, problems the central banks of the world running out of space and being cornered, and there's no way out to handle the inflation challenges?
Well, inflation itself, if it runs faster than productivity and wage growth, that naturally slows growth, because GDP is real GDP. It's inflation-adjusted GDP. So the higher inflation goes, the lower GDP will be. So economic growth is naturally going to slow. So, and also we have to understand that the U.S. economy, at least, is highly sensitive to changes in interest rates, because that was what was encouraged over many decades via monetary policy, is to encourage borrowing via low interest rates. So now we have a lot of debt, and modest rises in interest rates has a ripple effect into the credit cycle. We've seen already a 200 basis point rise in the cost of capital. We already are seeing a topping out in the US housing market. We are already seeing a topping out in the US auto market. Now, some of that obviously is supply side issues with getting enough cars, but consumers are already beginning to push back on the very high prices. With respect to the markets, quantitative easing was specifically meant to lift stock prices. Ben Bernanke wrote an editorial in the Washington Post in November 2010 saying that it is meant to lift stock prices, which will then increase consumer spending and production and create sort of this wealth effect and so on. So beginning next month, the Fed is going to be shrinking their balance sheet, maybe $80 billion to $100 billion per month, which is about double the size of the quantitative tightening that they initiated in 2018. So if QE helped stock prices, well, QT is going to be a headwind for stock prices. At the same time, global growth is slowing, which means that earnings estimates will likely go down. Because at the end of the day, there are two things that are going to drive stocks: the PE multiple and the earnings. Well, with higher inflation, rising interest rates, and QT, that's going to compress PE multiples. And the economic impact that I'm talking about is going to also negatively affect earnings. Now, there'll be some stocks that work, some stocks that I like, some groups like commodities and inflation plays. So it's not just I'm making more of a general comment, but I'd be hard pressed to think that the market's just going to rip roar through this.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we can go back to your book, Kushal, and Chip, can you give a summary of your book, the main theme points, and what the approach is all about, especially the cross-asset correlation?
Right. So, see, over the years, what had happened was I have been selling a lot of ideas and concepts to various financial institutions and high net worth individuals across the world. And the one thing that I was continuously realizing was many people were unable to link one asset class with the other. So for example, if the most common asset class, which we look at, crude oil, the most politicized one, people who were actually trading crude oil were unable to look at other assets which were, again, being related to crude oil. For example, a lot of petrochemicals come out from the crude oil. There are, even ethanol prices, again, calculated on the basis of where the crude is heading, due to which even sugar prices get affected. There was a time where sugar was considered like an energy commodity. And if crude oil prices used to be above $65 a barrel, the ethanol prices would start rising. Sugar prices also would start rising because there was a lot of sugarcane that would be shifted towards ethanol production. And, you know, the matrix would change accordingly. So in this book, what I have tried to bring is there are so many assets which get related to each other. So not only the commodities that are getting related to each other, but even after analyzing those specific commodities, you can in fact analyze the stocks. You can kind of build the future balance sheet or the future financial earnings of various stocks on the Wall Street. And you can forecast it much better than the usual discounted cash flow method, which analysts follow. And this results in very good picks of multi-baggers. And that is exactly what I have tried to bring in the book, all major asset classes and how they should be related to the stocks, how the changes happen. So even if I'm talking about crude oil getting connected to sugar, and then sugar getting connected to Coke or PepsiCo or something of that sort. So the book is clearly stating that the pro rata movement of a particular commodity results in a pro rata movement on the earnings of a particular stock. And hence, with a time gap, a person can shift from the commodity to the stock and sometimes back from the stock to the commodity.
Very interesting. And today, what are your models or approach indicating in terms of the different asset classes?
Now, for example, personally, I have gone extremely bearish on crude oil because whatever is the problem is just a supply logistics issue. Otherwise, the incremental demand is certainly diminishing in crude oil because the changes which are happening across the world, less of plastics being used and various other restrictions that have come in, has resulted in 11 to 17% of the consumption of certain crude products and byproducts disappearing from the world. So for me, $120, $125 a barrel was considered to be the highs that crude has made. I would certainly look at mid-70s to begin with the Q2.
Wow. And your thoughts, Peter, on the, in particular, the commodity complex?
Well, I would not discount the possibility of 70 in crude, but that would be in the midst of a global economic recession. I still think that oil prices go much higher from here. I can't tell you the timing, but over the next couple of years, there's just not enough supply. And that there is still demand increases every single year, whether it's from China or India or other emerging markets, or even in the US, which is increasing their demand for fossil fuels in the midst of this transitional renewable shift. And you can be sure that oil companies are not going to be dramatically ramping up the supply side when you have the US government releasing a million barrels of SPR oil a day for the next 6 months and further discouraging more drilling. So I do think that we need to go higher before we go lower in oil prices. But again, the demand side could get crushed if we do go into a global recession, which is always a possibility. I still think that the energy stocks are still discounting a much lower energy price relative to today. I think natural gas is all of a sudden one of the most valuable commodities out there. And I think that that has become obvious in the face of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and the demand for non-Russian natural gas, particularly liquefied natural gas that can be shipped from the U.S. and Qatar and some other places like Australia. So I think that is a really important commodity right now, and I'm actually more bullish on natural gas than I am on crude right now, even though I still think crude ends up much higher before all said and done.
And what about for other commodities like agricultural commodities?
I've been bullish on ag for years. I've been bullish on the fertilizer stocks for the last couple of years, but I do admit that I've recently sold them. The fundamentals definitely are rock solid. You definitely have major supply problems because of Russia and Ukraine, particularly on the grain side, wheat, sunflower oil, in particular, about a quarter plus wheat come from those two countries. But on the other hand, with Ukraine, they're going to be buying less fertilizers, unfortunately, because they're not going to be able to plant everything they want to plant. So while I'm probably way too early in selling fertilizer stocks, I did think after the recent sort of parabolic spike, it was a little bit too much for me. But fundamentally, the fundamentals are still good and the stocks are still pretty inexpensive. The other commodities, and I don't really consider gold and silver a commodity, it's more currency-esque like, I'm pretty bullish on that as well. And I'm also very bullish on nuclear, and I've been long uranium for a while in equity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And your thoughts, Kushal, on like the agricultural sector?
Before I touch the agricultural sector, I am absolutely with Peter where natural gas is concerned. And yes, I expect natural gas to move into double digits very soon. And one major factor that I want to bring out for natural gas is that a country like India, because he did mention about India, there is a huge shift that is happening in India from naphtha-based products to natural gas where the fertilizer industry is concerned. And India has been gulping down more natural gas than crude oil in the past 18 months. There's a huge shift that is actually happening. India is turning out to become a gas economy rather than what we call in India as a petrol economy, which is the crude economy. And that itself is going to drive natural gas prices very high. That's one thing. Where agriculture is concerned, I'm with him. The vagaries of weather plus the inconsistencies with the farm policies across the world is going to result in many, many agricultural commodities to shoot up. Or as the new generation calls it, mooning of those commodities. So that itself is going to play a havoc in the times to come. Mm-hmm. And my personal favorites, yes, I am extremely bullish on lithium. I have personally picked up a lot of lithium stocks across the world, from Australia to Argentina. And I still see lithium carbonate and lithium hydroxide prices shooting through the roof as the shift happens from the fossil fuel cars to electric vehicles. And these stocks are certainly going to give fantastic returns in the coming decade.
Interesting. And what about your thoughts on other industrial metals like cobalt, copper, and nickel, those type of commodities and associated?
Where copper is concerned, yes, again, I'm extremely bullish because of the charging stations which have to be put up across the world. The EVs and the charging station themselves require, I think, close to, I would say about, though I go on the metric system, so it is about 83 kilograms, that is what is required for each major charging station. And that itself is going to consume more than 33% of the copper production or the current supplies. And the supplies are not going to increase till the coming 4 or 5 years after what the whale mines had faced. The flooding issues, they've not yet come back fully into the production cycle. And that is also going to take about a year or two, and new copper mines are still far away.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And Peter, your thoughts on those type of industrial metals?
I mean, copper is certainly one of the most, if not the most important industrial metal right now, since it's an input into so many different new industries like EVs, of course, where an electric vehicle will use up 5 to 6 times more copper than an internal combustion engine. And, as stated, there's no doubt that there's not enough supply relative to the upcoming demand. Now, in the short term, if I'm right that the world goes into a recession, well, that will clip the demand side for copper and some of these others. But from a longer-term perspective, past that, I agree that these prices will probably go much higher.
Mm-hmm. Are you currently more leaning on the risk-averse side? What types of investment asset classes do you like the most at this time?
Well, it's obviously a much more challenging environment. I mentioned the bullishness that I have on energy stocks, mm-hmm. gold and silver, uranium, I mentioned as well. And there's still value stocks out there, cheaper stuff that that I like, more domestic oriented, less cyclical businesses, I think are an opportunity. And I think looking out over the next 5 to 10 years, I'm very bullish on Asia. I think that's where the global growth will be, notwithstanding all the challenges currently with China right now. But I'm bullish on Japanese stocks, Singapore stocks, Vietnamese stocks, and even some Chinese stocks. And I'm very bullish on India as well.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts, Kushal?
I'm with Peter. He's named all the countries which I would be investing in, and I have invested in. So I have nothing more to add, but certainly, yes, there's one more thing, is I have also made a lot of my clients as well as myself move into the crypto side of it too. I have been stating that, as we used to talk about 20 years ago, that at least 10 to 15% of your net worth should be in precious metals. I have been propagating that at least 10 to 15% should be in cryptos as well.
Mm-hmm. Which specific ones do you like the most?
Of course, one should have more weightage towards Bitcoin, because that is going to be like the US dollar of the world. So even all other cryptos are going to be earmarked against Bitcoin. So within the 15%, at least 40% weighted should be with Bitcoin. Otherwise, there are various other projects which should be given importance to.
Interesting. And your thoughts, Peter, on the cryptocurrency market?
I try to follow it as much as I can, relative to these other assets. And at least right now, I'm still more comfortable owning gold and silver. But the bull case for Bitcoin and others are similar to the bull case for gold and silver. Obviously, Ethereum and other blockchain type coins have obviously a lot more to it. But at least with Bitcoin, the bull case for Bitcoin is no different than the bull case for gold and silver. And at least right now, I'm just more comfortable owning gold and silver.
Great. Turning over to interest rates and yield curves, what are your current thoughts, Peter, in terms of what's happening, like on the spreads between some for interest rate yields on the yield curve, and any thoughts on trends thereof?
Well, almost every recession post-World War II was preceded by an inverted yield curve, but not every inversion in the yield curve has led to a recession. Because I believe in the economic slowdown is now upon us, I don't want to ignore the confirming message of the yield curve with that. Like I said earlier, we are very interest rate sensitive in the U.S., so when the Fed tightens monetary policy, especially as aggressively as they want to now, because they were so late to the game in raising rates, that to me, there is no question they're going to hike our way into a sharp economic slowdown. And that's just what I think will happen. And I think the yield curve inversion and the flattening and other parts of the curve is certainly giving us that same message.
And your thoughts, Kushal, for the interest rate bond markets?
All right. See, first of all, the growth engine this time is on a rampage. And even if the Fed is going to increase the rates, they've penciled in 6 increases coming up in the coming months and all that. I don't think so. The growth engine can be slowed down to much of an extent. The reason is going to be is we need to look at it from a global perspective also this time. Most of the other economies are in more trouble than USA is. Now there is going to be a huge inflow of foreign exchange coming into USA. How is Fed going to stop that? Now, again, all the assets which will be rising will be due to huge liquidity coming in because the other countries do not have much opportunities left. On the bond side of it, where we talk about the inverted yield curves and everything, the bond market itself is losing importance across the world. Hence, money is flowing more into the commodities and the stocks. Now, that itself is going to change the dynamics in a very big way for the economists to even think of how the event is going to unfold itself. So I have placed my bets very clearly that commodities and the stocks are going to rise very high. Bonds will disappear in times to come. I don't think there is going to be any asset class like the bonds down 10 years. So the importance of the yield curve itself disappears. There's no statistics that is going to be important for it.
Interesting. And Peter, do you see a similar international capital flows coming into the United States, perhaps from Europe, stemming from, you know, financial crisis there or repo repurchase agreement market challenges?
No, I mean, the dollar has been rallying against the euro for obvious reasons. It's been rallying against the yen, but it's really not rallying against anything else. Even the Mexican peso is at a two-year high against the dollar. The Brazilian real is at a multi-year high against the dollar. The Australian dollar is at the highest level since last year against the US dollar. The Canadian dollar is just off the highest level since last year against the US dollar. They're all commodity currencies. Even the South African rand is trading well against the US dollar. So that's not the sign of dollar strength. That's just a sign of, yeah, we have a war in Europe, and we have Kuroda in Japan that is the most dovish central banker left. So that's not reason for money to pile into the US because it's not expressing much confidence. If anything, you have global central banks that are gonna probably want less US dollars after the sanctions that were put on the central bank of Russia, which proved that nobody's reserves are safe, and particularly if you have it denominated in euros and dollars, which could mean that they diversify into maybe gold and increase that part of their FX reserves. But I am a lot more bullish on emerging markets over the next 5 to 10 years than I am on US markets, just as the reverse US markets did were the standout over the last 10 years because of US tech relative to the rest of the world. I think that reverses from here.
And your thoughts on that, Kushal, in terms of emerging market opportunities?
I think emerging markets as well as the developed markets, I think the returns are going to be similar. If the things are going to be more tech driven, then I think, of course, the American markets will be beating the emerging markets hands down.
And does that insight apply to like the technology sector as well? I know we haven't mentioned much about that, but the tech sector with the recent FANG types equities, what are your thoughts there?
See, of course, they are flexing their muscles across the world. I mean, if we look at Amazon's, we look at Netflix, all these companies are gaining a lot of ground into the countries where they were not in existence. Like Africa is coming under the cloud of Amazon. Netflix is gaining into more than 28 countries in Africa. Netflix has moved into India in a very big way. Netflix is moving into a lot of other countries of Asia. Amazon is also taking over a lot of local companies which are not having that kind of the cash reserve with them. See, so these companies are going to grow at multiple levels across the world. So just looking at USA will not be enough for some of these companies. And we also need to look at some of the other tech companies which are going to be driving the kind of the other growth engines, the new metaverse that is coming up. I mean, the metaverse that is coming up, trying to defeat global mobility, that please sit at home, sit in your office, let's have a meeting being conducted. So that is what has resulted in the chip shortages and everything. Of course, the chips are even for the cars, for the gaming industry and everything. So all this technology is going to eventually come mainly from the Americas and the Europe's only. The emerging markets are eventually going to be only the job processors of it. So the margins are not going to be very high on their side. The margins are going to be much higher on the developed market sides, who are going to give them the patents and the copyright to produce this technology. So that imbalance is going to remain, and that can result in the most of the American markets still beating the emerging markets over a certain period of time.
Very interesting. And just your final thoughts, words of wisdom, Peter?
I think we just have to be aware of the changed macro landscape, that the investing world becomes more difficult when you have higher inflation and global monetary tightening. You know, I talked about what the Fed is doing, but the monetary tightening is a synchronized global thing right now. Outside of the BOJ and the Swiss National Bank, everybody is raising rates, or at least ending QE. I mean, even the Europeans want to get out of negative interest rates by the end of the year. So when you have global monetary tightening, that is going to be a headwind for both stocks, credit, and the economy. And I think we just be aware of that. It's not just to be bearish for the sake of being bearish. It's just with the benefit of hindsight over the past 10 to 20 years plus, markets do well when central banks are easing, and they run into headwinds when they're not. And right now we're in a world with, because of high inflation, because these central banks way overdid it on the easing, way overstayed their welcome, and were all dead wrong on the transitory inflation call, they're all now scrambling to play catch up. And there are gonna be consequences for that, because if there weren't, then lunch would be free and we can just print our way to prosperity.
Right. And your final thoughts, words of wisdom, Kushal?
I think this time the old adage is going to play its role. Markets are going to climb the wall of worry this time. And it will be better to be bullish right from 2022 for a couple of quarters before we see other changes coming in.
Great. Well, it's been very insightful discussion. How can our listeners learn more about your work, Peter?
Well, if they're interested in reading my daily commentary, they can subscribe to bookreport.com. As you spelled it earlier, bookreport.com. And if they're interested in wealth management and investing services, they can check out our website at bleakley.com and reach us there.
Great. And Kushal?
Of course, I think you have already mentioned the link to my book is going to be there. So that is one way of understanding what is my thinking and what a mindset of a true speculator has to be, which is revealed in the book. Otherwise, usually the public are in touch with me on my public domain email, kushalthacker@yahoo.com, which is kushalthacker@yahoo.com. I think I would be very glad to take questions from anybody around the world.
Awesome. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Thank you, Kushal and Peter. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks, Peter. Bye-bye. Thanks. Take care.
Great to meet you.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.